We are tucked away in a churchyard somewhere in Austin, Texas again.
In an undisclosed location.
Yes, Central Presbyterian Church.
Yep. Well, okay. In a disclosed location.
Previously.
Yep, that's right. Central Presbyterian.
Where it says no trespassing.
Yeah, we stepped over the no trespassing signs because we're terrible people.
Right, we're just broadcasting. So...
We saw a show tonight.
We put on a show tonight.
We put on a show.
This was the night we worked many, many months for here at South by Southwest. I'm here with Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson, Robin Hilton, Bob Boylan. I just was looking through my notes of things I saw today, and I said to myself, and I think you did the same, was that today?
Wasn't that 3 days ago?
I have already seen more music at this point than in any other previous South by Southwest for me, yeah.
What's your secret, Robin Hudson?
Well, you know, I try to eat right and get plenty of exercise and
leafy green vegetables.
I think I just was more aggressive in plotting my calendar this year.
So how did it pay off?
What did you see?
First of all, I saw Taurus, which is the one that we talked about last night.
I'm sorry, Taurus is so Tuesday.
And I saw a lot of stuff that I already knew, even though I hadn't seen them live before. Lone Bellow. A big OMG moment for me, seeing the Lone Bellow. I didn't really, their record did not really register with me at all. Then they did the Tiny Desk and blew me away.
Right.
And then seeing them again today, oh my gosh, incredible.
Yeah, they're going somewhere.
Yeah, Lone Bellow. See them live if you don't. Saw Pause, which I think we may have talked about.
We all wound up at Pause.
A little great garage rock band from Glasgow. It was perfect, exactly what I needed at that moment.
P-A-W-S.
Yes. The big surprise that I just happened into is a band called Wildcat.
I was there, but they never went on. I heard their sound check, which was kind of boring.
They involved a lot of floor tone.
Yeah.
They were really good. It was only two keyboards, no guitars. It was two keyboards and bass, and it was sort of, this will sound atrocious, but it really worked, was this sort of disco 80s pop mix sort of sound. But they did a cover of Tears for Fears.
Shout?
Everybody Wants to Rule the World, and the singer had the perfect voice for it. I came in just as that song had ended, and NPR Music alum Mike Katzeff was there too, and both enjoyed that show a lot. And then saw Lucius, which was also just wonderful.
Were we all at the Lucius show? You Anne didn't make the Lucius show.
Lucius was also another Tiny Desk band I'd never heard of until Bob brought him. Bob's batting 100.
It's interesting. I don't expect to agree with Bob's tastes, but you know, I've been really trying to avoid particularly seeing bands that have been at the Tiny Desk.
Yeah,
because I feel like that's a very concentrated.
You're trying to avoid that.
I do. I'm trying to see as many bands that I've never seen before as possible.
So different.
And trying to reach beyond really my usual genre interests. But I wound up at Lucius, and they were very charming at the Tiny Desk. They were awesome in concert. They seemed a little campier to me
at the Tiny Desk, but there was more.
Well, no. Everyone just sort of grabs hand percussion and goes. But they're all, you know, they wear matching outfits, and they're very stylish, very colorful.
Basically dress in like they managed to seemingly find things at thrift store that match,
which is amazing. Yeah.
that's what it looks like to me. And the three guys who are great players do the same.
Huh.
So they wear matching outfits, which doesn't say much about the music, but they have a cohesiveness to them that
I actually really like bands that work on cultivating an image. You know, it's like The White Stripes. Jack White had such a specific idea in mind. What he
vision,
wanted.
I guess, is
yeah,
where
I like it.
It is. It could also be a shtick and be silly.
But it's not like war. It's not like they're wearing costumes and stuff like that. It's like,
you know,
it's just having. It's caring about the way you look.
I would be okay if it was like war.
All right.
Speaking of somebody mentioned, I think Anne mentioned multiple drummers.
Yeah.
I saw Jonathan Boulet.
Oh,
he did
who
it.
I talked about on the preview show.
Yeah.
Singer, band leader, guy from Australia.
Yeah.
And I mean, multiple percussionists kind of says it. It was very, you know, I compared him to Fang Island, and it kept that aesthetic through. I didn't see his entire set, but really, really enjoyed it. Loved Lucius. I also opened my day, at least in terms of music, by seeing Marnie Stern.
I saw her last night.
And you were today too. Yeah, and you were saying, Anne, you know, what an inspiration she would be to your 9-year-old daughter. I also have a 9-year-old daughter. If she shreds like Yngwie Malmsteen the way that Marnie Stern does, that would be pretty cool.
Awesome. I saw, I opened the day with an artist named Shugo Takamaru and a guitar player. The beauty of that show was that the, obviously the Japanese, but the beauty of the show was that the woman in the group played lots of toys. So I woke up to this, like, kind of really pretty lullaby-esque toys, but a really brilliant guitar player, Shugo Takamaru. I'm a guy from Brooklyn.
Sorry.
Google it.
Very brilliant. Also did see Paws as well, which was great, and with Lucius we wound up in the same place. I went and saw Yako Gardner, someone we did on our preview show, and had seen him in D.C. a little bit. It is very much like seeing 1966 Satanic Majesty's Request, Rolling Stones, well, 67. Fine. That sort of psychedelic Dandelion, right. Rolling Stones period stuff. They sound an awful lot like Foxygen, and they both sound a lot like the Zombies, yeah, from Odyssey and Oracle.
It's all adding
and
up.
I'm going to talk to...
Where are you going with this, Bob?
Yeah. I'm going to be interviewing Rod Argent and Colin Blunstone, and I'm going to talk to them, I think, about how
these
all these new bands that all love that stuff that they wrote
influence.
That at the time didn't have much impact.
Isn't that what happens so often? Well, speaking of bands influenced by other bands, I didn't get to see the Depeche Mode interview that Jason Bentley did today, although I think a transcript will eventually be available somewhere on the web. But I did see a band called Nazca Lines, NZCA/Lines, who were so influenced by Depeche Mode in a really great way. And, very arty, poppy, dancey British band. The singer has a great falsetto. And I don't know what struck me about it. You know how something like can fit in a category and you can hear nine bands like that and then you hear the tenth and something about the timbre of the singer's voice or the way the rhythms are put together just grabs you. And that's what happened with this band when I heard them on Stephen's Bundles, and they totally impressed me live too. They really had a nice little set. So
Stephen's Bundles is actually the name of my band.
I want to talk about one.
It's not the name of your porn career.
Anyway,
Lordy.
Good night, everybody.
Wait, I have something else to say to Stephen. So, but you were also at that Dawes, that moment during the Dawes show, and I've seen Dawes a bunch, as I think probably all of us have. I walked in just as they were doing their song, A Little Bit of Everything, and it's such an outstanding song, and the delivery today was, you were saying too, it really worked.
Well, I have this relationship with this song. I've never quite fully embraced Dawes.
Right.
They have this song, this ballad called A Little Bit of Everything, and you're going through and you're like, well, this is a little hokey. And then the second verse, you're like, yeah, this is nice. This is a little
it's very storytelling-ish, Randy Newman-ish.
And then they hit a verse, so you're going along and you're kind of, I'm on the fence. So for whatever reason, that song gets me every time.
For me, and
perfect moment for the horns to start honking because I'm not here to. I can't play Highway to the Danger Zone when Steven's having
feeling heartfelt about something.
The best band I saw before our showcase hit, maybe the best band I've seen here so far, is this British band of four women called Savages, and if you haven't seen them, go see them. Absolutely charismatic, right in the period of Susie and the Banshees and Gang of Four sound, but they're their own. And
Savages.
Okay. Yeah, definitely check them out. And then
we had our amazing showcase. I think we all agree that Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds did that reverse headlining thing where they opened the show. And
complained about the light.
He did. He said,
"I'm going to start out with a really long song.
It gets dark," which is true of everything Nick Cave does.
Like, if there's anybody who can conjure the night,
yes, it is him.
It's Nick Cave.
And I thought it was going to be kind of a mellow, some Boatman's Call era ballady Nick Cave night, and it was totally not. That guy was on fire.
Yeah. Mike Katzen. He texted me during the show and said, "You a Nick Cave fan?" And I said, "I am now." Yeah. And he wrote back, he said, "Same here." And I was just always, I mean, I like Nick Cave. I thought he's interesting, interesting sound. I've never had owned one of his records. Every time I hear him, I'm like, yeah, he's interesting. But my God, after seeing him live tonight, I am a convert. That guy absolutely crushed it, just killed it. We have passed that show off to Nick Cave. It is in his hands. He is looking at the recording. Hopefully he'll be happy with it, and if he is, we'll archive at least part of it on
and
the
And if he's not,
site.
He's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome. I guess I just didn't know what to expect, and I was just stunned.
I think a lot of people knew Nick Cave, knew of his work. David Brown said this, went into the audience from KUTX, David Brown, the DJ here, went in the audience, talked to a bunch of people who really came to see Nick Cave but really did not know Nick Cave, and I think he just won a lot of people.
Yeah.
He really selected well from his past catalog too, doing some very old favorites, including the title track from his debut, from the Bad Seeds debut album, From Her to Eternity, and he did Deanna. I won't go into the specifics anymore, but just to say it was a really well-chosen set list as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of stormy stuff. Like,
yes.
The new record is really good, but it's very brooding.
Yeah,
it's very slow.
Exactly.
And, you know, when he kind of opened with something brooding and slow, you kind of
You're
think
like,
that's where
okay.
the set's going. Like, this will be fine.
Right.
But then he just kicked ass.
I know. Any set that includes the Mercy Seat, basically, you're hitting a pinnacle with Nick Cave.
And one thing about Nick Cave that I thought was true of all the artists tonight were they just were so commanding. I mean, they just absolutely had the audience
we
in the palm of their hand.
We saw stellar performers.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. Karen O.
I wrote,
that was your favorite, right, Stephen?
Yeah, I wrote essays for to go on the website for all seven concerts that were, you know, part of our Stubbs lineup. And I kept trying not to use the word commanding because it came up again and again.
Right.
And Karen O of the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, I've always been somewhat on the fence about Yeah Yeah Yeahs. Like, I never pull out their records and listen to their music. I like some of their songs, but they're very just on a plane that I'm generally not on when I'm listening to records. And I was blown away. And particularly, I loved the way the band kind of part, the sea parted on stage.
Yeah.
Her band was around the periphery, the back of the stage, and so she had this massive space to herself
right.
to just hold...
Prowl.
And she was
yeah.
wearing an amazing outfit. It was sort of like a giant cheerleader pom-pom mixed with Elton John's
I thought it was
Captain
Elvis.
Fantastic
There's a sparkly
outfit.
Fez at
yeah.
one point. But, I mean, the mixture of seeming bonkers
yeah.
while totally in control. There was never a point when she wasn't in control.
Absolutely.
I just loved that song.
Cafe de Cuba, same thing, absolutely own the audience. And then in Leaf, I thought was incredible.
Lots of voguing. You might know that from Madonna's hit
dun,
Vogue,
dun,
the
dun,
style of
dun,
dance
dun,
that gay men, dun, dun, dun. Gay men of color in New York developed imitating fashion models on the runway. And Leaf is taking it to a whole new place. He's a young, openly gay New York rapper, and he's got a really great, sleepy kind of rhyming style. And
I love his flow. I love the weird kind of barking and squeaking, it's just such like little bits of conversation. I was
a little bit Jamaican flavored.
I also thought that he was a really interesting, appropriate companion to Karen O.
Yes, that's true.
That both had that kind of animalistic, and you know, and just very. I mean, it's that word again, commanding.
Yeah.
I thought he was terrific.
She ended with that scarf, playing with a scarf, much like maybe she plays with a towel in the bathroom. But she did this thing where she wrapped the scarf around her. Leaf started his set, not knowing, I'm sure, what Karen O had just done, because he was in a room, a small room in Stubbs. But he started his set off with a scarf around his neck and pulled it off.
Yeah. Very historic, you know, inspired by predecessors in pop history, whether it is the voguing culture of New York or in Karen O's case. I felt a lot of Yoko Ono in her vocal approach tonight, but at the same time forging their own path. And then there was Waxahachie, a young woman named Katie Crutchfield from Alabama, now living in Philly, who doesn't have as much experience as Karen O, definitely, but had her own kind of quiet command, I think, in her performance.
And that was true
tonight.
Of Youth Lagoon, too. The two artists who didn't own the audience.
Yeah.
You know, you could be engaged. If you liked the music, you were engaged, but they didn't do anything to reel you in.
Right.
I think they were both fine representations of their sound.
And I thought Youth Lagoon, having seen a solo of Youth Lagoon, having a band was such a major improvement.
A very important move for him. And I thought it was interesting that Waxahachie's first record is solo singer-songwriter.
Right.
Second record is full band.
Yeah.
And she kind of, that was mirrored in the set in an interesting way.
Started off with two solo songs and then ended with all the last
bunch
handful
of full band
songs. Full band songs, yeah.
But there was nobody anywhere in our lineup where I thought, ugh. I'm really gonna have to fake it through this essay.
I was excited to hear Café de Cuba in that setting as well.
Yeah.
With an audience. I've seen them play to audiences of mostly Latino, Spanish-speaking fans, but this was a much more of a mixed to probably not Spanish-speaking audience, and they still totally got into it and were dancing along, and it just proves you can cross that language barrier and music still completely works.
I think it's something that I thought tonight watching the crowd, and something I thought myself and felt myself while watching these bands, is just how important it is to get out and see live music, because it changes the way you perceive the music that you may have already been listening to or maybe have dismissed completely or didn't think much about. I mean, I've gone and seen beloved bands that gave just the worst performance, you know, and it's just such a letdown. And then bands that, like you say, you're on the fence with the yeah, or these bands you think you know and you don't really know until you see them live. Right. Get out and see live music. Yeah. Do it.
And the band that won me over over the summer was Alt-J, whose record came out in May, and I liked the record just fine, but when I saw them live, it totally won me over. And tonight, ending our set, they were just magnificent.
Yeah, I think there was it's interesting. I felt a little bit of a showmanship deficit.
But I didn't mind that, because it was after so much. It was almost like a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
You know, after so much intense command.
Yeah. But you had, like, the strut of Nick Cave, the celebration of Café de Cuba, the command of Yeah. And then, you know, painstakingly recreating these delicate, knotty little bundles. Knotty, not naughty. little bundles of that are their songs. It was a more restrained way to end the night. But I think, like you said,
was in the music, though.
You needed
that a
little bit.
People were dancing, which I thought was great, even though the music was sometimes fairly mid-tempo.
Can you dance? I feel like you can
totally
sing.
Oh, my God. That is my dance music.
Me too.
I had
like
to think of any
me
dance
too,
music.
Totally.
I feel like you can slither
to
the music of all
time. You can move your body to that music.
That is totally dance music. But yeah, all night long, I saw audiences get won over.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, like, I think Felix Contreras was on our webcast, and he said that he noticed that during Café de Cuba that there were people in the audience who were like, okay.
Started
and then they just started,
little,
and then they're moving a little more, and moving a little more, and then they were won over.
Well, I remember looking out over the crowd at Café de Cuba, and a few songs in, you know, again, like, there's more and more motion in the crowd. And I look and I see this, like, foot and a half tall mohawk kind of bobbing agreeably.
Awesome.
I've seen him all day, by the way.
I want a gif of that. Can you make a gif of that for me?
That's so funny.
That'd be awesome. Well, another great day.
Yeah.
This is our day two. We'll be back for more. 11. Dave Grohl's keynote is live, so check that out.
And come join me in the chat room. I'll be chatting there.
11 a.m. Central and 12 noon.
Eastern.
And then we'll archive that. So.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Yeah.
We've only just begun.